Productions. Recorded live.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and it's January 17th, 2011, and you are on the Q&A subscription call, and we've got several questions and people listening in today, so let's get on with it. Here's the first one. It reads as follows. During affairs, do sex addicts ever consider the emotional collateral damage and not just the she'll be mad at me kind of thoughts? If not, does that mean the knowledge was blocked? Because how could anyone not realize the emotional toll this would take on my wife and family? Here's how we got on this topic. We were talking about how this shattered my wife's self-esteem. Me, equal, I never knew this would be the result of what I was doing. Wife, really? How could you think, just as a human being, that having sex with someone else would have no effect on my self-esteem? Are you sure that you didn't know, or that you knew it but just didn't care at the time? Actually, Peggy Vaughn has a great point when addressing this particular topic. She wrote The Myth of Monogamy. Peggy says that, and I think this is really true, so I don't want to take credit for something she pointed out. The person that's acting out, especially in an addiction, all they're really thinking is, no one's ever going to know, I'm never going to get caught. They're never thinking about the long-term ramifications, especially the sex addict. They fear that someone may find out, but in their mind, they're taking it to their grave, and so in that sense, they're really not thinking about what the collateral damage would be. Part of the problem that begins to happen is for the addict, what is occurring is there's a type of narcissism. So they are really empathy impaired, intimacy impaired, until they get into recovery. And at that moment when they're acting out, there is such a strong sense of entitlement and self-centeredness. They're truly not thinking of other human beings until that illusion, the bubble that they're in, gets popped. And at that point, they have to begin to deal with it. But up until that point, oftentimes there's very little empathy, very little thought as to what it's going to do to other people, very little remorse. At one level, there's a sense of entitlement, and that is the problem with sexual addiction. So as difficult as it is for your wife to conceive of how you weren't thinking about her, because I like the end of this where it just says, are you sure that you didn't know, or just that you knew it but you didn't care at the time? For most people, it would be they just didn't think about it whatsoever. Frank Pittman, in some of his work, refers to that as people acting out in sexual addiction being emotionally retarded. He said that men are even worse about that than women, which is one of the reasons it's difficult for wives to understand that concept, because they believe that their mate's motivations are similar to theirs. They project onto them how they would be thinking, and the fact is the addict's not thinking that way. The addict's hardly thinking at all. All they're really doing is thinking about how they're going to act out and how they're not going to get caught. They don't really consider ramifications. So hang on just a second. Now, for the second question. In your latest article, Why Trust Is So Hard, your advice to the hurt spouse involves two different things to be aware of when it comes to the betrayer. If you're exploring the possibility of reconciliation, be cautious. If their heart is soft and they're taking responsibility, try to see their heart. Is it possible to have a soft heart and not take responsibility? Since there's so much more information about in our number two here, the soft heart and taking responsibility, what should a – number one, could you please explain, number one, more closely? What should a hurt spouse be cautious about regarding the betrayer's behavior, responses, and thought patterns, and what are the common denominators indicating the person does not have a soft heart, although trying to convince the hurt spouse that he or she has. So I think when, in terms of number one, when I talk about reconciliation, be cautious, I'm really talking about time. I believe that it genuinely takes time for people before you'll really know what direction a person is going to go, and certainly begin to reengage. You can explore, but it's going to be consistency over time. And is that person genuinely pursuing their own health, their own recovery? And are they, again, continuing to take responsibility? My concern happens when, and maybe this answers the second half of your question here, if someone is being critical and blaming, I think critical and blaming bothers me even more than defensiveness, but if someone is being really critical and blaming and nitpicking you after they've been unfaithful, I believe that there's such a core at that point still of self-centeredness that it really raises grave concern, because that criticism to me oftentimes is an indication of an inability for that individual to take responsibility for what they've done. What they're doing in their own mind is they're blame shifting. I would almost be afraid what they're really looking for is somebody who's going to simply adore them, praise them, tell them they're doing great. And I think there's certainly the ability, you know, or there needs to be a willingness to point out when good is done. But if someone's, you know, just hammering you, then it does feel like a blame shift. And that doesn't need to happen in a healthy relationship or an unhealthy relationship. The criticism is not a good thing. Ultimately, the taking responsibility and soft heart, what I mean by that, is just simply they're genuinely concerned about what they've done to you. They have remorse. Oftentimes, even with defensiveness oftentimes to me is a point of pride, or the fact that actually they're dealing with a great deal of shame. And if they're dealing with shame, then hopefully they're going to get the help they need to begin to work through that. They need to find a whole another system. I would say in that situation, the New Hope for Life course that is coming out is going to be really helpful for someone, because we talk a lot about self-centeredness. We talk a lot about defensiveness. We talk a lot about shame. How do you begin to differentiate in those things? And again, that criticism for sure to me is not about a soft heart, and certainly blaming someone else is not a soft heart. And I think you see it far more by actions. Again, defensiveness may or may not be an issue of their heart, so maybe that will help out a little bit. Is it possible to have a soft heart and not take responsibility? You know, I don't know how it would be possible, by the way, to answer that one. I mean, to me, the person who's broken is humble. They actually are taking responsibility. I don't think the two could I don't think you could have a hard heart or soft and then not be taking responsibility. So that's my opinion on that one. Next question. The question someone posted, so someone else posted this. The question someone posted here, didn't know or didn't care, got me thinking about what you usually say when asked about compartmentalization, that it is as impossible to explain to the hurt spouse as trying to explain the sun to a blind person. The blind person equals hurt spouse, betrayer, enjoying the sight of the sun. Ouch. I have to admit this metaphor hurts a bit, you know, on top of everything. Anyway, is the person posting the question maybe granting us a little insight about what compartmentalizing is about when sharing the thought pattern she'll be mad at me. Can compartmentalizing involve? She'll be mad at me, so I choose not to tell her, but still go ahead doing it, kind of knowing you're doing something wrong, but still continuing to do it, excusing it away with, she'll be mad at me. So somebody else's natural response to the behavior somehow becomes a rationalization for continuing to do it. Can compartmentalizing involve not ever considering the emotional collateral damage and or knowledge being blocked? Is it possible to explain compartmentalizing to someone else to someone else than a hurt spouse, say a person who is studying psychology counseling? If so, how would you do that if you had time, 5 minutes, for doing it? Let me look at this question here one more time at the very beginning. During a fair sex act, consider the emotional collateral damage, and do sex addicts consider the emotional collateral damage and not just she'll be mad at me kind of thoughts? So, I mean, my first thought of that she'll be mad at me kind of thoughts, I think all he was doing was an extreme minimization when he says she'll be mad at me. It's just the full extent of what he considered that would happen is they would be upset. They never really gave any thought, no remorse, no brokenness. It was just all he could conceive of is that she'll be mad at me. She'll be mad at me, so I choose not to tell her. Okay, so here, can compartmentalizing involve? And let me answer this. She'll be mad at me, so I choose not to tell her, but still go ahead doing it, kind of knowing you're doing something wrong, but still continuing it by excusing it away with she'll be mad at me. So someone else's natural response to the behavior somehow becomes a rationalization for continuing to do so. Actually, I think that she'll be mad at me is in response to just what they think the consequence would be. I don't think that it's, I mean, they may use that as a rationalization, but it would be the rationalization to me for deception. You know, and I think a lot of times when people don't share, they'll rationalize that. But the rationalization to me isn't necessarily the same as compartmentalization. The compartmentalization is making sure that this stays away from current life. It's as far as the East is from the West, that the two don't meet. And in their mind, they're separate behaviors. They're never going to meet. The thought of really telling and exposing it isn't even there. So it may be used as a rationalization for continuing the deception, but the behavior drives itself. It's not. It doesn't need anything to drive it. Number two, can compartmentalizing involve not ever considering the emotional collateral damage? Absolutely. The knowledge is blocked. The bottom line is, if you ever know me, this is just classic thinking for a sex addict. If you really knew me, you wouldn't love me, you would never accept me, you would hate me, you wouldn't have anything to do with me. With those core beliefs going on, then there is no way that they're going to let the two worlds begin to come together. And so they don't really they fear the collateral damage, but it's not something they dwell on. If they dwelt on that, it would be too much of a, it'd be too painful. So they live under the illusion that nobody's ever going to know. So because the illusion is nobody's ever going to know, they're not worried about she'll be mad at me, mostly because it's over here, separate and totally apart. Third, is it possible to explain compartmentalizing to someone else other than a hurt spouse, say a person who is studying psychology and counseling, et cetera? If so, how would you do that if you had 5 minutes? Compartmentalization, and I'll try again. And when I use the analogy of trying to explain light to someone who's blind or the sun to someone who's blind, you know, I think rationally or intellectually you can understand at one level. You can believe it to be true, whether or not it makes total sense to you. I understand nuclear – I mean, I understand a little bit of how fusion works, but I don't really get totally how it works. I mean, I've got an idea how they split atoms and what a centrifuge does, but I don't really get that. So, I mean, I think you can have a basic knowledge of it. But in that person's mind, when someone compartmentalizes, it's like there is two lives. And literally, they're not thinking of one life when they're involved in the other life. The two do not exist concurrently. In fact, it's possible to be so focused on the addictive object, wherever that connection or that attachment is, that you literally are you're not even really present oftentimes in the moment with other people. So it's almost like there are two distinct separate sets of self. There's a false self and there's the real self. And the person at part of the time lives in the false self and operates as if they're in the false self. They're like a totally different person. But that person, when they're in that addictive nature, isn't considering anybody else in that other world. It's almost, I wouldn't say it's an amnesic barrier, but it's a very strong barrier. It's a different state of mind. And maybe that's the best way to say it to someone who doesn't understand. There's a different state of mind. You live in a different persona. You live in a different way. There's a whole different set of rules. This, like Jekyll and Hyde, Jekyll can do things that Hyde cannot. And the problem is, and Hyde can do things that Jekyll won't or whatever. And in that sense, you know, if they don't begin to deal with that duality of those, that compartmentalization, then they can never really develop a concern, a remorse, if they don't, I think, come in, begin to heal and to integrate internally, to ultimately look at how they impact other people, develop love. Ultimately, there's going to be a problem. So I hope that helps answer that question for you a little bit more. If not, let's post another question farther down the line, and we will try again on that one. Next. Recently, my wife expressed that she feels she cannot say to me, say no to me when it comes to having sex. She knows that if she does say no, I'll feel rejected and it will most likely upset me. I'll admit that it does, and the rejection seems to hurt more than it did before I knew about her affairs. I feel like it's a personal attack on me. I refrain from telling her things that will hurt her, and I don't mean to make her feel like she can't say no to me, and I want to believe that she's is not saying it to upset me or reject me. It's just that I feel like I'm doing most of the work to keep things going, and she seems to be she seems to do just enough to seem like it's a real show and that she wants to be here. I understand that it's hard for her to talk about this and her mistakes, but she puts so much effort and time into her affair and lying about it. I would think, since this is more important, she'd be putting in more of an effort. It's an unfair situation that I didn't ask for, and I'm having to bear the brunt of the whole thing. I cannot seem to figure out how to handle this. First off, I would want to say that what was going on in the affair had nothing to do, ultimately, and I say this all the time, and I hope, you know, it just seems true to me, it just really didn't have a whole lot to do with you. In fact, it really had to do with someone being very self-centered, and at that moment, it was just about the procurement of adoration, appreciation. It had nothing to do with the other person. Most people would tell me when they're in an affair, it's not that they really like the other person that much. In fact, what they've done with the other person is they've done what we call idealized them. Or there's a crystallization. All they can see in the affair partner is things that almost an illusory image of who that person is, and that this person would like them, and they adore them, and they're perfect, and blah, blah, blah. So what is driving that her desire at that point is the wanting to get something that she doesn't have, and just how all of that is making her feel. Marriage is such a very, very different institution than an affair. It's real. It's authentic. It's not perfect. Ultimately, you have to be able in your heart, I think, to care and to learn to love another person. It's, you know, in studies and just almost behavioral psychology, we'll think about it, a rat who gets an intermittent reinforcement by hitting a lever to get a sugar pill that has cocaine or whatever is going to work a lot harder doing that than they're going to work if they're just trying to get regular food pellets. They like the thing that ultimately is going to make them high, and they will go to all kinds of lengths to do that. You have a real relationship with your wife. It's never going to be cocaine. It can never be what she had with her affair partner. Therefore, in fact, it'll never even be close to what she had with the affair partner, no matter how good you ultimately are. I had a woman a while back tell me about hooking up with someone on a cruise and how incredible it was. They snuck in behind the lifeboat, and it was the most amazing sex. And she told me, she said, "Now that's what I want in my life." And I said, "Well, I hope you enjoyed it, because it's probably the last time you'll ever experience that sort of feeling again as long as you live." And then she said, "Well, why not?" And I said, "Because that was a perfect storm. I mean, you sit there and you have all the intrigue. You're doing kind of the bad sex thing. It's secret. There's all the fun that comes along from doing that sort of activity." I said, "You'll never be able to have that in a bedroom with your mate. There's not the intrigue, the naughtiness, all of the factors of that. They're gone. They don't exist." I said, "So it won't occur." Well, and the same thing holds true for your marriage. Probably your wife is putting far more effort into your marriage than she ever put into the affair. In the affair, she was compelled, she was obsessed, she was like a puppet on a string being controlled by emotions. She wasn't free to do what she wanted. She was actually a slave to feelings that were compelling her into places that she didn't want to be. In the marriage, she's choosing to love. And I think that is a much more difficult situation. And I don't think that's the right situation, but learning to love and to grow in love and to be a real woman, to learn how to appreciate you, it may be something that she's never done. This may be totally new behavior for her. So you can't compare it to what she was doing in the affair. To me, those are that radically different situations. And I hope that answers the question a little bit, but the way you handle that, I think, first off, is to understand she is probably trying to respond to you in meaningful ways. I mean, I don't know your situation exactly, and I don't know her, but don't consider what she had in the affair similar to what the two of you have. It's different. It has more potential in some ways, but it will never be what she had there, which is what was compelling her. Now she has to find new motivations, new ways of loving. She has to grow up. She has to mature. Without that, there would be very, very little hope. I know it probably feels like you're doing most of the work to keep this thing going, and you know that may actually be true. You may, out of love, be carrying a large part of the load. One of the things that I always try to say at the beginning of 911, or you know, in our stuff, is that the person who's been hurt has a much, much more difficult path than the person who was unfaithful. That the person that is going to end up doing the vast majority of the work will be the hurt spouse. ultimately, if reconciliation is going to occur, the person that's going to carry the majority of the hurt and the pain for the offense is going to be the hurt spouse. I mean, all I got as a result of what I did was I got blessed. I got everything I didn't deserve. I did not get what I deserved in any way, shape, form, or fashion. I was very, very blessed because my wife was willing to work really hard as a result, because she did have to work hard to keep things together. If your wife is ambivalent about coming back to the relationship or just how much she's putting into it, it may be that it in fact, I know it's not just it may be. Oftentimes it takes a while for someone to get beyond the craving for the high and to begin to accept life and press into life and to really begin to give and to figure out that she's got what she wants. You know, I can't tell you how long that takes. I certainly think it's still worth waiting the 18 to 24 months and seeing what can happen through that process. Years ago, I had a guy tell me, and it was interesting. He had been in several affairs. Thought he was in love, thought it was wonderful. He was a very successful doctor here in town. And when he came in, he said, you know, we just don't have the romance. You know, and his wife was just a sweetheart. And she was working so hard at trying to forgive him, trying to work through all of this. And he would say, she just doesn't do it for me. You know, there's just something missing. And it took about 18 months. And I remember he came in the office one day and he said, you know, the most amazing thing happened. And they'd been married about 20 years. He said, I was sitting at the baseball game, you know, Saturday, and my son was up to bat. And he said, my wife was behind the backstop, and she was screaming, just reading the umpire, I mean, giving the ump the riot act. I mean, she was all over the ump. And I looked off to my left, and there was my daughter playing catch with another kid, another girl. And I kind of went back and forth, and all of a sudden my heart just melted, and I said, this is it. This is what I've really always, always, always wanted. It's what I've always wanted. And at that moment, it just clicked. And he said, I've got it. It's not out there. It's not something else. But he had to do a lot of personal growth before he could begin to see that. Because up until that point, in a self-centered state, you know, what you fear is boredom. What you fear is average. What you fear is just normal. Because it's got to be something extra to be hyping you up. I mean, that's where many people come from when they're beginning to come out of an affair. Hopefully their hearts change and they begin to understand what's real and they begin to enjoy and appreciate what's real. So all I can tell you on figuring out how to handle this is begin to look at places that she is making effort. I'd invite you to consider the possibility maybe she's trying harder than you understand. It may not be the way she did it with the affair partner, but this is by choice. And when she's in the affair, I promise you it wasn't by choice. At some point, it controlled her. So with that, we'll close out today's call. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. And keep those questions coming for next week. Hope you guys have a blessed day and a blessed week. To life.